The Up and Under podcast is proud to be a part of Off the Ball Network. For all things basketball, football, soccer, golf, baseball, sports betting, you name it, go to offtheballnetwork.com and check out the amazing articles posted by writers of the network, including yours truly, and the other podcasts on basically every sport under the sun. Off the Ball Network, your home for quality sports and entertainment content.
I'm ready when y'all are, I guess.
All right, ready.
Yep.
All right, 3, 2, whatever.
What is good, everybody? It's your boy Francis Carlotta on episode 54 of the Up and Under podcast. First off, a little insider information. Grant and I actually recorded this episode last week, but we had technical issues, to say the very least, which is why we're recording again. And no Grant Hechinger this week. I'll introduce my guests in a moment. But I bring up last week because my introduction mentioned how we spent an offseason on the trade machine only for basically none of the expected trades to go through. Well, that changed. After 84 years of Damian Lillard clamoring, pining to have Portland move his talents to South Beach, Dame's time is up in the City of Roses. However, unfortunately for Miami, the clock struck midnight on their crappy trade offer, and I've always thought it was a crappy trade offer. Instead of Dame teaming up with Jimmy Buckets, Damian Lillard will play with the freak himself, Giannis Antetokounmpo, a trade that has shocked the landscape of the NBA. But wait, there's more. Jrue Holiday, the man responsible for, in my opinion, the most audacious lob in the history of the NBA playoffs, got sent to Portland. Now, everybody, we knew he wasn't staying in Portland. This was like Chris Paul getting traded to the Wizards. Though, damn, seeing him play on such a desolate roster would have given me joy to see Chris Paul stay at Washington. I don't like Chris Paul. That's not breaking news to anybody. But same with Jrue in Portland. So the question was, where does Jrue Holiday end up? How about a team where Jrue Holiday would be a hand-in-glove fit? A team that traded its heart and soul and its perimeter defensive anchor just a few months ago. That's right. It's holiday season in Boston, y'all. And to discuss all that, the impact on Portland, the impact on Phoenix, the East, the NBA as a whole, and really to do the original segment for the show discussing teams in flux who could also make an impact on the season, I'm absolutely honored to be joined by one of the best damn sports writers out there for Off the Ball Network, Medium.com, his own website, Deep Cover Sports, Omar Zoran. How are you, man? Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Francis, man. Love to join you here. You hit me up, and I wasn't expecting it, and I'm just happy to be here. And I'm glad we have something to talk about before the NBA season starts, right?
Yeah.
Huge trades, and the NBA's a 12-month league now, right?
Yes.
Things are always happening. So I'm super excited to dive right in and just talk about all of this.
Yeah, sounds good, man. Yeah, It's been a fascinating week, to say. Like I said at the beginning, it was kind of moving at a snail's pace for a little bit, and then all of a sudden, boom, the one trade that set off the domino effect for other trades that affect the entire landscape of the league. I love it. I'm super excited. So let's talk about the trade. We'll get to our actual segment that we had pre-planned for the podcast in a bit, but let's talk about these trades. So quick winners and losers. Tons of podcasts have done full deep dive breakdowns on this, and I'm sure if you're listening to this pod, you're a hoop head as well, so you have your own opinions. But let's give just quick winners, losers, and let's start negative, Omar. Let's start negative. I'm such a positive guy, but let's change things up. Let's be a little negative. Omar, give me a loser of this trade. It could be, you could take it any direction you want. Give me a loser.
I mean, it's obvious. It's Miami, right? Like, yeah. That's you. Not only don't get Dame, right, which is kind of, they had all the chips in the middle to get him, but you also don't get Holiday in the trade. And it's not even just that you don't get the guys. Like, if if Holiday went to the Clippers or Dame went somewhere in the Western Conference, you could kind of understand, okay, it's fine. We'll figure something out, Miami, Heat culture, whatever. But the problem is that the top two teams in your own conference now got incredibly better, you can argue, you know, yeah. And Holiday is, one could argue, fit right now to win now in Boston as opposed to Marcus Smart. And obviously Dame becomes the best player that Giannis has ever played with by far. And conversely, Giannis is the best player that Dame's ever played with.
Yeah.
You know, the pick and roll is going to be crazy. Those two, it's almost like expected that they're going to meet in the conference final now. And if you're Miami, you're on the outside looking in because, you know, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, good duo. It's not Giannis and Dame, you know. And when you go to the Boston side, you get Holiday and you got Tatum and Brown still. And you brought in Porzingis, you know. So health, you know, permitting, you know, that's going to be another formidable team in the East. So you're kind of now on the outside looking in with teams like Cleveland, you know, that are good but not great on that level. And this is a team that just made the finals, you know, and you could say it's unexpected. They were an 8 seed, the play-in, the whole thing, whatever. But the fact is they got to the NBA finals. And you go from that to now you're probably on the outside looking in. You may be a second-round team in the eyes of most people. You got to be a loser there. And you thought you were going to get Dame the whole time. You know, and so as a Knicks fan myself, it reminded me a lot of the Donovan Mitchell stuff from last summer.
Okay.
You know, where the Knicks thought, oh, we're getting them. You know, we don't have to capitulate to Danny Ainge's demands. We're just going to get this guy eventually because he wants to be here. Same thing, right? Dame unsettled, wants to be there. Well, that's not how the NBA works. So, you know, they're going to the Joe Cronin is going to take the best offer that he could get. And like you mentioned it earlier, that offer from Miami wasn't very good. And it really ultimately comes down to how do you value Tyler Hero? And Portland didn't value him very much. And they liked DeAndre Ayton, who they end up getting in the deal from Phoenix. And now they have a bunch of assets from both trades, and they could start their rebuild with Scoot Henderson and DeAndre Ayton and Shaden Sharp.
Yep.
So if I'm Portland, I'm happy. But if you're Miami, you got to be miserable because, you know, you end up with nothing.
I echo all of that. Shout out to President of Off the Ball Network, Chris LeBron. Shout out, Prezi. Shout out to our guy. I went on his pod maybe sometime over the summer, maybe some July-ish. I'm forgetting the exact month. But anyway, went on his pod. Talked about Dame and all his potential trades. And he put out this proposition to me and my good friend, also at Bluff City Media, Brandon Wakiji, where, all right, congratulations, you're now the GM of the Portland Trail Blazers. You now have all pull to trade Dame in whatever manner you would like. What would you do? And I told him very clearly, well, what I would do is I would have Damian Lillard come into my office, I would thank him for his service, and I would tell him to his face, I'm trading you where I can get the best assets for my team. I know you want to go to Miami, but you're not dumb, Damian, and I'm definitely not dumb if I'm the GM of the Blazers of a basketball team. I'm not stupid. I know that this offer is pretty bad, and this is probably the best that Miami can do. And if I'm gonna trade you, Dame, it's got to be for a three-team trade. If Miami's involved, it's got to be a third team, or I just trade you somewhere else, like point-blank, period. And it turned out being a three-team trade without even Miami because Miami, their offer was just not good. And I fully echo what you said about Miami being a loser because think about even a year ago, another a summer ago where the whole thing with James Harden was happening. And, you know, could we have foreseen that this is the type of James Harden we'd be getting? No, he was still a good player. And heck, maybe if he went to Miami, which maybe fit his lifestyle a little bit more, you know, maybe it would. Maybe he'd be happy. Maybe he'd be motivated. Who knows? But point being, this is two summers in a row where Miami was trying to get a superstar to team up with Jimmy, with Bam, and Miami just, they didn't do it. They didn't pull the trigger. They valued Tyler Hero too much. They wanted to keep their later first-round picks, and they just didn't do it. But they had all the opportunities to. And sure, hindsight's 20/20. Looking back, great decision by Miami to not trade for James Harden. They just made the NBA Finals. So great decision. But even then, it's the idea of Harden is different. Is a different guy than Dame at this stage, mm-hmm. this stage in their careers. Damian was an All-NBA type player last year. I don't think he made an All-NBA team, but he had the numbers to make an All-NBA team. It was just his games played, which I might be wrong.
If they didn't shut him down, he would have right. made it. You know, they were kind of tanking towards the end there. Yeah,
there we go. Yeah, exactly. So his numbers were All-NBA caliber, and Dame is still Dame. He's still a damn good player, and thankfully he showed some stability health-wise. And when he goes to Milwaukee, yeah, and we'll talk more about the winner aspect of this trade in a moment. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I fully echo what you said. Miami's got to be a loser. I'll quickly give a loser from my perspective, and I say mm-hmm. quickly because I want to talk more about this team later on in our segment. Okay. So Philly's a loser mm-hmm. of this trade.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'll talk about more in depth about Philly and have some questions for you about him later on. But very quickly, just to touch on it a little bit, yes, they're a definite loser of this trade. They're not even in the trade. How could they be a loser, Francis? Well, there's so much uncertainty with this team, and they were second in net rating last year. They were actually a very good basketball team, and they had hopes mm-hmm. to win an NBA title last year. And with the MVP Joel Embiid, you're going to enter every single season with hopes to win with an NBA title. Right now, Omar, you'd be dumb to bet on Philly to win an NBA title. That would be stupid, in my opinion, as the way the roster is currently constructed. So I think Philly's a loser. We'll talk about more about them in a bit. So mm-hmm. let's get positive, Omar. Let's get positive. Give me a winner for the trade. Let's be positive.
Okay, so I'll have a two-pronged answer here. The obvious answer is the Bucks, right?
Sure.
You know, Giannis was dropping the tea leaves all summer long about, you know, well, maybe I'll sign here. Maybe I'll sign elsewhere.
Right.
I just want to win, right?
Yeah.
And because if you look at Giannis, you know, I wrote about a piece about this trade from the Bucks' perspective recently. And
yeah.
if you're Giannis right now, you're a Hall of Fame player, right? If you retire today, he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Right. And he has all the accolades you need. He's won a title. You know, he has multiple All-NBAs, All-Stars. The numbers are there. Whole thing. And he's only 28, 29. So right now he's in the point of, I want to accumulate titles. Right. I want to go from that group of guys like a Moses Malone, who only won one title, to guys who've won two, three, and more titles than that. And that's how you get in that elevated thing. It's ring culture. You know, you might not like it. That's just how it is in basketball.
Right.
And he's basically like, look, he's looking around. He's like, I'm still awesome. But the guys around me, not so much. Jrue Holiday, as much as everybody loves him, his numbers precipitously dropped in the playoffs. Mm. Like mm-hmm. he went from a 37% three-point shooter in the regular season down to 30%. Again, Knicks fan, it's like Julius Randle, right? Like, he's great in the regular season, but come playoff time, the efficiency's not there. And you mentioned before one of the greatest lobs in playoff and finals history.
Yep.
It's true, but it's hard to ignore also that there is a drop-off. Chris Middleton, constantly hurt when it matters. Brook Lopez is not getting younger. Bobby Portis, a nice bench piece, but it's not enough, right, to contend for titles in today's NBA. So Milwaukee had one of two ways it could go. They could say, well, you know, we won our title with Giannis. We'll try to improve around the edges, kind of how Cleveland did in the LeBron years, right? In the first tenure, you know, they get a minimum contract here, a little contract there. They say, no, let's go ahead, swing for the fences. Let's be aggressive. F the future.
Yeah.
We want to win right now, right? And that's what they did. So in essence, they did two things. They got another superstar in Dame, but they also took Giannis off the market, because now you would imagine he's going to be happy, more than likely signs an extension as long as they win this coming year. And they're immediate favorites to come out of the East. The other winner, I think, is Portland, because all this pressure about well, Dame wants to go there. You got to do right by Dame. Everybody was kind of getting on the Blazers front office. It's not like, let's not act like Dame got traded to some scrub team, like got traded to the Houston Rockets or the Detroit Pistons or something, right? He got traded to a team that's ready to win titles right now. His best team that he's ever been on, you know, in his entire career. And this is a player who's been to the Western Conference Finals. You know, he has some pedigree there. You know, he's a great playoff performer. But Portland to get Ayton from Phoenix and to get all the draft picks, And to get rid of Nurkic's contract, which is something that people aren't really talking about. That was just an albatross, and now they don't got to worry about it. I think they're positioned well for the future. They're going to be bad for a few years, no doubt about that. And if Scoot Henderson is as good as everybody thinks he is, it's a slam dunk for them. And if you really look at it, all the players that Portland has gotten rid of over the past few years, they've kind of sent them into good situations. You know, like they got rid of CJ McCollum. Like, oh, God forbid I go play with Brandon Ingram and Zion Williams. You know, that's intriguing. You know, so they're not going to be in a situation where they're just screwing over their players. They're trying to get them into the right position, but also not only capitulating to the demands of the team. But overall, those are the two teams to me that are the runaway winners of this. I think the trade from Phoenix's perspective is kind of weird. You know, I actually have Phoenix down in my teams to discuss later, but so we could talk about Phoenix later. Ooh. But, you know, giving up on Ayton so soon is interesting to me. And not really getting much in return. You know, I didn't really get that from Phoenix's perspective, but, you know, got the trade done. So, you know, I guess that's all that really matters.
Yeah. And also, on the more fantastic points that you brought up, I was going to mention your article. So I'm glad you mentioned the article you put out about the trade. Everyone, please go check it out. It's on Off the Ball Network. It's about the whole trade, breaking it down from Milwaukee's perspective and the idea of staying aggressive. And I love how you mentioned the LA Rams and how they won a title just a couple of years ago. And is it all worth it because they won a title? Absolutely. Look at them now. You know, last year they did not have a good year last year. This season it's kind of just we'll see what happens with this roster currently. But they got a title. They got their championship. You can say a similar thing about the Lakers and how they won their championship in the bubble. They got their title. It was all worth it. And then what were the seasons after that? Perfect? No. Last year, they found good success, made it to the Western Conference Final. So they still obviously have the pieces, and they built a good roster last year to sustain some sort of excellent play. But it's still worth it. No matter what downturns occur, if Milwaukee wins a title this year because of the trade for Damian Lillard, it's worth it. No question. No question about it. So yeah, I 100% echo what you said earlier as well. I think from a Portland perspective, they've got to be a clear winner, like you mentioned, in terms of the haul they got for Damian Lillard. I mean, I mentioned it earlier and how crappy that Miami Heat trade offer was. Well, let me just lay it all out. What Portland got for Damian Lillard? They got DeAndre Ayton, Malcolm Brogdon, Robert Williams, Tuamani Kamara, 2024 first from Boston, 2029 first from Boston and Milwaukee, 2028 and 2030 pick swaps with Milwaukee, which some GMs, some front offices just view that as getting a first round pick because you're swapping for the best version of the pick, which is still there's value to that. And that haul from top to bottom is way better than anything Miami could have offered. It was what? Tyler Hero, Victor Oladipo, maybe Nikola Jovic, and like two first-round picks. Like, that's probably
Jaquez as well. Yeah, I mean, mentioned.
Yeah, right, Jaquez as well. But even then, this haul, miles better than anything Miami could have offered. So good on Joe Cronin, good on Portland for getting the value that they believe Damian Lillard is worth, no question. I think
Francis, we have to understand, Miami first-round picks are not good.
Yeah,
this team has been bad over the last 30 years, like three times, you know, and so you're not getting into the lottery with a Miami first, you know, even if it's no protections or anything, you're probably after the lottery 15 to 30, you know, that range. And, you know, in the NBA, we know you want a top 10 pick, you know, that's ideally what you want to get. And you're not getting that with a Miami first. You might get that in a unprotected Milwaukee first, you know, who knows what happens later, you know, in about 5, 6, 7 years. But yeah, that's another thing to consider. You know, you can't fault the Blazers for not taking Miami's offer, you know? And again, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, they didn't do right by Dame because he could live in Miami. Now he has to live in Milwaukee. Yeah, I was like, it doesn't matter if he's holding up that Larry O'Brien trophy come this summer.
Right. Yeah. Another great point. And now I think another winner of this trade of these sequences, we got to touch on Boston, man. Boston's a winner of this as well. I know the front court situation will be kind of interesting because mm-hmm. you're now tough. Relying on Al Horford. Yeah, tough. It's all on Al Horford now. You kind of punted on Robert Williams. As good of a player he is, you're taking the gamble that his injury issues will just continually persist, and they just don't want to put up with that anymore. So I get the gamble. I get trading him away. But I really like them getting Jrue Holiday from the perspective that I touched on in my intro, because you trade away Marcus Smart, your heart and soul of that locker room, of your defense. We know who Marcus Smart is. We know how much he was loved by his teammates, by the coaching staff, by everybody. The whole city of Boston loves Marcus Smart. Mm-hmm. When he got traded to Memphis, it was almost like they did a eulogy for Marcus Smart in Boston because they were so sad that what they believed was one of their own was leaving the Boston Celtics. And now he's a Grizzly, and I'm very happy about that, obviously.
Of course, yeah.
But for Boston, there was now a void that they needed to fill, especially on the perimeter defensively. They needed to fill that void. Because you look at the roster as previously constructed, you're now relying so much on Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, and Malcolm Brogdon, yep. who's injury-prone and not a great defender either. So it was going to be difficult for Boston to replicate Marcus Smart's value defensively. Well, in comes Jrue Holiday, one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. Definitely same tier as Marcus Smart. I don't know who's better mm-hmm. or whatever, but same tier. They're both top-tier perimeter defenders who can guard up, can guard one through maybe even four or five. Because Jrue mm-hmm. Holiday, as we know, that dude is strong. You're not just gonna back down Jrue Holiday in the post. He is a strong guy who's gonna pester you and bother you. Same thing with Marcus Smart. It's a hand and glove fit for Jrue Holiday to be in Boston. You also get another ball handler and another decision maker when Boston doesn't want to just throw the ball to Tatum or throw the ball to Jaylen Brown. They have a point guard who can move the ball and make the right decision. And Jrue Holiday is a little bit better of a shooter than Marcus Smart as well. And so hope mm-hmm. if he, you know, you talked about his deficiencies in the playoffs, but if he can keep the level up in the playoffs, he could be an asset definitely on the offensive side as well. So as much as I'm not a Boston Celtics fan, but as much as I was kind of looking forward to seeing the turmoil with Kristaps and how that's going to hold fit in that roster, but now I think adding Jrue Holiday, he fixes a lot of those issues and concerns that I had regarding Boston.
Yeah, you look at it, what Smart did, he took so much defensive pressure off of Tatum and Brown, who could both defend pretty well, you know, not yeah. take anything away from them. But when you could take some of that pressure off of them to be able to cover those, you know, high level scores on the perimeter on defense, it's a huge thing. And Holiday slides right in there perfectly. I'm curious to see the lineups with him and Derek White with Holiday kind of playing off ball. You know, he's obviously like a combo guard, but I feel like he is better suited not really initiating all the time. And I think you get him doing that. And I mean, if Kristaps holds up, I mean, he becomes a third or fourth option on offense, which, you know, having Jrue Holiday as your fourth option, that's an incredible luxury to have. I know a lot of teams would like to have that. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think you got to be, if Boston holds up from a health perspective, you know, Holiday getting up there. Porzingis' injury history is well documented, you know, from going all the way back to his days in New York and, you know, in Dallas and Washington. And, you know, but if they could stay healthy, you know, that's something. But a lot of pressure on the front court with Al Horford. But, hey, if they can figure it out, you know, they got two wings that are high level. So you hope that maybe they could, you know, erase some of those deficiencies. And they should be an interesting team to watch this year.
Yeah, I fully agree. You can run out some interesting lineups, too, with Jrue and Derek Wright, like you mentioned. You could do Derek Wright, Jrue Holiday as the 1-2 in whatever order you like, but as your main guards. You got Brown at the 3, which he's definitely capable of playing. Tatum at the 4, if you want to run small, you get Kristaps at the 5. You can do that and just run up and down the court and have a lot of shooting on the floor as well, because Kristaps can shoot. Tatum can shoot, Derek White can shoot, Jaylen Brown can shoot, and all those guys can handle the rock to a decent degree. I know we talk trash about Jaylen Brown's left hand, but still, like, they can all handle the rock to a good degree and put the ball on the floor. Like, that could be a fascinating lineup moving forward. Like, they have some versatility with adding Drew Holiday to the roster. And like I said, I think one of my bigger issues was defensively, because how are they going to switch with Kristaps? And, you know, they're such a switch-heavy team. Without Marcus Smart, like, how are they going to do that consistently? But now you can kind of form a better defensive scheme with Drew Holiday, especially in how you're going to guard pick and rolls. You can do drop coverage with Kristaps because Drew Holiday can maneuver screens extremely well. He can get over the top. He can go under screens and still have long, good contests. Like, you can be more flexible with their defensive coverages with an elite defender in Drew Holiday. So like I said before, a lot of the issues that I had concerning Boston, they are alleviated to a high degree. Like, I think Boston's going to be very good. And my last thought on the trade is really just, let's just fast forward to the Eastern Conference Final, and let's have Milwaukee and Boston in the Eastern Conference Final. We need that. Sports fans need that, because it'll be crazy when that happens. But I think this trade, there's a lot of winners across the board. We touched on the losers. Do you have any other thoughts on the trade before we move on, Omar?
No, man. Excited to see Dame in the East. A little terrified as a Knicks fan that anytime we got to play the Bucks, even more so now. But that is going to be a league pass must watch most nights of the week, is watching the Bucks play. So definitely looking forward to that.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so let's move on to our main segment, talking about teams in flux that could still make a big impact on the season. Let's just do three teams for the sake of time. And I don't know your list. You don't know my list. Omar, again, you're the guest. So give me a team. I know you mentioned Phoenix, so you can talk with them first, or you can throw a curveball out there. All up to you, bro.
Listen, I'm on a podcast talking to a Memphis Grizzlies fan, so I am going to talk about the Memphis Grizzlies.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So what's so funny about the Grizzlies, they're flying so much under the radar right now. Because Denver obviously just won the title. Everybody's talking about the Lakers as being finals favorites. Everybody is talking about Phoenix after they acquired Bradley Beal. And then you had all the machinations with the Portland trade and, you know, what's going to happen in Golden State, all this stuff. And what we're discounting with Memphis, this is a team that has been amazing in the regular season, past few years, really ever since Ja came in. Granted, he does have the 26-game suspension.
25. But
that's why you got Marcus Smart. Oh, 25, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, that's why you got the Marcus Smart acquisition, right? And I think that he brings this sort of playoff experience that they don't have, you know, between Jaren Jackson and Ja and Bane, Brandon Clark, all these guys, they have excellent talents, not seasoned in the playoffs. Marcus Smart has been to the conference final multiple times. He's been to a finals once. And you're bringing him in as a player that really could kind of, I don't want to say mentor Ja, but really just kind of bring some toughness to this team in the playoffs. They could win in the regular season. We've seen that. What it is can they next level get to a conference final and maybe even a final? They have all the talent there. They have a defensive player of the year in Jackson. They obviously got an electric superstar in Ja. They got a great shooter in Bane. They got an amazing rebounder in Adams. They got all the stuff you want. They also bring in Derrick Rose for veteran leadership. You know, he's kind of downplayed the whole, you know, being a mentor to Ja thing. But that's what he is. I've watched him for the past few years in New York as a Knick. And the effect he had on Emmanuel Quickley cannot be overstated. The effect he had on RJ Barrett cannot be overstated. And the effect he had on Julius Randle cannot be overstated. So that is going to just pay so many dividends come playoff time. And I think a lot of people are kind of writing them off. I think a lot of people wrote off the Grizzlies after all the Ja stuff, right? And I think that they're a team that could make some noise in the Western Conference Finals. And we might be waking up and they might be in the conference final. And we wondered how that happened, you know? And so I really think that now on the flip side, it could go completely wrong, right? Sure. You know, there's always that possibility. But I think that a lot, they're a little unexpected right now, and they could probably cause a lot of shakeup in the West. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, could they, if the cards fall right, knock off one of these kind of contenders in the West in second round? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, a lot of people are just, you know, writing them off because I think because of the suspension, a lot of people are saying, well, that's too many games to miss. He's going to take some time to have to come back. And what are the Grizzlies without Ja? You know, that whole thing. And, you know, they have a chance to prove everybody wrong.
I like it. I like that you brought him up on this segment because I was probably looking at it from rose-tinted lenses, you know, probably thinking about, because again, I'm from Memphis, fan of the team, love my Grizzlies. So maybe I was thinking about it in a more, in terms of the podcast series we're trying to do, the teams in flux, and then the teams on the rise, and then contenders. So I was going to save talking about Memphis for contenders because that's who I believe mm-hmm. they are. I believe they're contenders. But I appreciate your view of the Grizzlies as well because they do fit the definition. They are a team kind of in flux because with Ja Morant's suspension, what do the Grizzlies look like in those 25 games? What is Ja Morant going to look like when he comes back from those 25 games? Is he going to just pick up and just be light work, easy transition back into NBA speed basketball? Probably not. It'll probably take some time for Ja to get his legs under him and be the Ja Morant we all know he can be. So yeah, I think it's a good way to look at the Grizzlies. They are a bit of influx, and we'll see what happens with that team. Obviously, I cover the team for Bluff City Media, and I do have high hopes for the Grizzlies this season. I think anybody who believes that the Grizzlies are a playing team or anything like that. So Kendrick Perkins, I'm talking to you. No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how you can believe that. And if anybody does, let me remind you that two seasons ago, the Memphis Grizzlies were the 2 seed in the West. What happened last season? The Memphis Grizzlies were the 2 seed in the West. And Omar, they were the 2 seed and they lost like 8 games in a row. In the middle of the season because Steven Adams went down. Mm-hmm. They lost like eight games in a row, like 10 of 12. They were bad for a good stretch of the season, and yet they still finished second in the West. So if that stretch didn't happen, Memphis could have been the 1 seed in the Western Conference. And no one talks about that. No one mentions how consistently good, very good, the Grizzlies have been over the past couple years. And to look at this roster that got better with the addition of Marcus Smart. And yeah, again, Ja's out for 25 games. I know that. But they got Marcus Smart to fill that void, and he's still a very good player. And I talked about this with Nick on his podcast just yesterday. Smart's ability as a passer is very underrated. He averaged around 6 assists per game with a high assist percentage. He's a good playmaker, and that's one big advantage over Dylan Brooks. You know, we got him as not just a Dylan Brooks replacement on the perimeter, but as an upgrade offensively. And that's what Marcus Smart is. He's an upgrade offensively than Dylan Brooks because of how good of a passer Marcus Smart is. He's going to connect the play. He'll make the right reads. You're not just going to see Marcus Smart take 4 dribbles and a stupidly contested mid-range jump shot that's going to hit the side of the rim. That's not what you're going to get, you know. Is Marcus Smart the best decision maker of all time? Can he have his moments and weird shot selection? Sure, but he still, without a doubt, is a better offensive player than Dylan Brooks. So am I going to sit here and say that the Grizzlies are going to be the 1 seed in the West definitively? I'm not going to definitively say that, but I think there's a genuine chance that for those 25 games, Memphis goes like 15-10 over those 25 games. And then after those 25 games, when Ja Morant comes back, there's another good chance that they have a very good record. And they play really good basketball. And Memphis finishes in the top 2 in the West. At worst, get home court advantage, so be a top 4 seed. Because that's just how good this team is. And from top to bottom, you know, I don't want to go on a diatribe about the Grizzlies and talk more about, you know, Jaren and Desmond. But those guys are very good players, all-star caliber players that didn't just leave Memphis. Like Memphis still has tons of talent. So no, I like the way you phrase it, and I think Memphis they have a real chance to make some noise and kind of silence all those haters out there.
I do have a question for you, Francis. So you mentioned obviously you cover the team for Bluff City. You're from Memphis, big Grizzlies fan. Do you find, because I'm only asking this because I tried covering the Knicks myself, and I just couldn't consistently do it and not let the bias get in the way, right? Because, like, you watch players, they get there, they get drafted. Like, I'm over here defending, you know, bench players on the Knicks or whatever. And so after a while, I said, I just can't write about a team I root for, you know? And so I'm curious, like, I don't want to go too off the rails, but sure, I'm just kind of curious if like, how do you approach, you know, covering a team that you're a fan of and, you know, be able to speak about them pretty objectively? Because, you know, if you recall over the summer, you know, I, you know, reached out to you to do some research about a Ja article I was writing. And, you know, my takeaway from that was, he was very grounded, wasn't overly fanboy about it, you know, and like, you're obviously, it's clear you're a fan of the team, but, you know, it's there's like a line. And so how do you kind of find it's easy not to cross the line, I guess, and become too much of a fan?
SeatGeek is the newest sponsor of Off the Ball Network. If you're listening to this podcast, there's a 99.9% chance you love sports. But watching these games in person is super expensive. To help ease the pain in your wallet, use the promo code OffTheBallNetwork to get a $20 discount for first-time users of SeatGeek. Your next best night ever is waiting, and SeatGeek has the tickets.
Well, I appreciate the question. It's definitely not easy. It's not easy at all. It's pretty tough, and something I have to be very cognizant of as I cover the Grizzlies, as I cover the Memphis Tigers, a team that Memphis Tigers are why I love basketball. So when I write about them, watch their games, and talk about the players and et cetera, coaches, et cetera, I just have to be very cognizant of being objective. I can't let my bias get into the way of my writing and my stances and my points. And, you know, I wrote a Ja article. I recapped his whole season last year. And I'm very proud of the article I wrote, because I think I did so in a very objective type of way, because I still have a lot of faith in Ja Morant, and I believe he will come back and he will rise again. And that's not me as a fan. That's just me as an NBA fan who wants to see a young superstar have his redemption arc. And he messed up. Like, again, we talked about it, like you said, Omar. He messed up bad. Let's not sugarcoat that. It's very, very bad. At the same time, was it damning for his career? Should it be the reason why his career is over, that he can't come back from it and learn from his mistakes? No. It shouldn't be the reason. It shouldn't be that detrimental to his career. And I think there were a lot of external factors that played into the criticism of Ja Morant, like we touched on a couple months ago. And those external factors, we can't control them. And so I tried to just be very objective about the whole Ja situation. And just, I have to be cognizant of not letting my bias towards being a fan of the team get into the way of how I write about him. When I critique a player, critique a team, I will happily do so if it's deserved. There is no question about that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's another thing I've tried to figure out is, where's that line of criticism too? Because these, especially when I write about the Tigers, these are college kids. And I don't want to write an article where I'm just scorched earthing these players who are young, still learning the game of basketball. So I got to be cognizant of that. And then critiquing Grizzlies players, I think it's a little bit more of a longer leash in terms of how critical I can be towards them. But if they deserve it, I will happily give the criticism. Like, no question. Like, I'm not a David Roddy guy. I have a lot of Memphis Grizzlies fans love David Roddy. And I am not a David Roddy guy. I'm very clear about my view of him. I'm very clear about the deficiencies in his game and my worry about him as the maybe future starting three of the Memphis Grizzlies. I'm very clear about that. And I try to be so, and try and be fair with how I look at players and the Grizz and how they're playing. I'm first and foremost, I'm a basketball fan at heart. I love the game. And I have to remember that when I'm covering the game of basketball, covering these teams. and something I continually try and improve on.
Yeah, appreciate the answer, Francis. It's something that I've always wondered. You know, like, I follow a lot of Knicks content creators and their fans as well. I don't know how they do it, you know, especially, I don't know what Grizzlies Twitter is like, but actually, fun fact, the team actually follows me on Twitter. Sick. So that's pretty cool. But
yeah.
But like, Knicks fans get kind of all lathered up, man. They're just kind of insane with it, because, you know, it's a franchise that's been starved for a championship for over 50 years now, and obviously the Grizzlies haven't won yet either, so, you know, kind of in the same boat there. But yeah, just like dealing with that vitriol and then navigating your own fandom, to me, it's just always felt like, you know, I'm just more comfortable talking about it.
That's totally fair. And you know, we've interacted a lot on Twitter. You're one of my favorite people mm-hmm. just to talk to in general, and I feel like you know me to a decent degree. Sure. I try and stay pretty mm-hmm. level-headed throughout all sports discourse. Mm-hmm. You know, if I do reach an extreme, it's usually about like the Filipino basketball. I get very excited about that. Or it's about a team that I root for, you know, Michigan football. I'm wearing Michigan blue right now. Or Memphis Tigers basketball, Memphis Grizzlies basketball. But even then, I'm trying to get better as just a sports fan of being more grounded, being more in the middle, not letting my emotions get the better of me. And, you know, especially mm-hmm. since when I covered Memphis Tigers or Memphis Grizzlies games specifically, like, I'm watching the games, I'm writing about the games live, and I'm giving my live reactions in my articles, and those things got to be out within 30 minutes because it's the game recap, and I got to get them out fast. Yeah. I got to beat writers from the Commercial Appeal, the Daily Memphian, blah, blah, blah. Like, I want my article first. So I have to be very cognizant of not being emotional when writing about the game specifically, because mm-hmm. if I get too emotional and I react too emotionally in my writing, that's not good. That's not what we're here for. That's not to say I can't put my own pizzazz in my own writing style, but I can't get too emotional and too high or too low, especially when I'm writing about games that are happening live. Because I gotta stay level-headed, mm-hmm. I have to stay middle, I have to stay focused on my piece, and I can't let the being a fan affect how I'm writing, if that makes sense. And that's something I've been trying to work on, especially when I'm covering games, because I have to be more middled.
Yeah. Again, sorry for derailing the influx conversation there a little bit, but appreciate the answer.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess we could move on.
Yeah, yeah. All good. I appreciate the question. Absolutely. All right. So my team that I touched on before, so let's just talk about them now. Philadelphia 76ers, man. Yeah. 54-28 last season. Third in the East. Third in net rating. I'm sorry. I think I said second early in the pod. Third in net rating. I think for me, they are the ultimate team for this category. Now, after infamously losing Game 6 at home and Game 7 in Boston, they're stuck in this weird limbo. But when you think about Philly, that shouldn't be the case. They have the MVP, Joel Embiid, and yet no one really knows what to make of this team because of James Harden. Is he going to get traded? What will they get in return? If he stays, what version of James Harden will they get? Is there even a version of James Harden currently that can help them win a title? I have no idea. Like, Tyrese Maxey is super important, and Omar, he's really good. At the same time, Tyrese mm-hmm. Maxey shouldn't be this important. He should the hopes of Philly's title hopes shouldn't rest on Tyrese Maxey's shoulders. Like, he should be a fourth option offensively, third at best. But right now, we're looking at Tyrese Maxey mm-hmm. as the second option on the offense, and that feels unsettling. That doesn't sound right to me. And then you look at Tobias Harris, and Tobias Harris is probably, when you think of above average basketball players, Tobias Harris should be the first name that pops into your head. He is an above average basketball player. Is he good? No. Is he great? No. Is he bad? No. He's not even average. He is above average. That's what he is. He's not any better. He's not any worse. But that above average isn't going to, that shouldn't be your third option offensively or your second option. Because it's like a flip a coin. Who's first, third, or second? It's Tyrese or Tobias. And I don't like that. I don't like that for Philly. And then the rest of the roster besides them definitely don't move me at all. PJ Tucker's 38 years old. Pat Beverly is 35 years old. Montrezl Harrell was horrible last season. So, Omar, let me ask you. what do you make of Philadelphia? What's their ceiling? What do you make of this team? Because it's just for me the perfect definition of a team in flux. That yeah, they could still make an impact. They could win a first round playoff series, make a second round, flirt with making an Eastern Conference final because they have Joel Embiid, a generational type player, and the reigning MVP. But also at the same time, this team could explode. Like this, they could be a 7 seed in the Eastern Conference because it's just Embiid, and Embiid could get hurt. As we know, he has injury issues. Mm-hmm. I'll stop talking. What do you make of Philly, man?
I mean, the Harden stuff is not great, right? You know, like he's over there in China talking about how much he hates Daryl Morey. Embiid, you don't know how long he's going to hold up with his physically. I mean, this is a guy who's had injuries almost every year of his career. Yes, he's coming off MVP season. But, you know, they were a team that really was kind of, you mentioned it earlier, kind of losers in that Dame sweepstakes. And, you know, that would have been something to show Embiid that they're serious about winning.
Yeah.
You know, they had the whole Ben Simmons stuff. And then, you know, they bring in Harden. And I want to give Harden a little bit of credit last year. He had his two best playoff games of his career, probably, against Boston. And, you know, he showed himself as a little bit of a different player. You know, you mentioned he wasn't the same Houston James Harden, which is true.
Yeah.
He kind of turned into a little bit more of a passer. You know, the assist numbers went up and all that. But at the end of the day, you know, Joel Embiid's trying to win the title. And if you're not surrounding him with players that can help achieve that, he's going to want out. So right now they're like staring right in the face of you know, being middle of the road in the East and – you know, having this Harden thing linger. And right now, like, the asking price is, looks like a first-round pick, you know? And
multiple.
Like, he wants to go to the Clippers.
Well, I remember
correctly, at least. Yeah, I mean, it's like the price just keeps going down. You know, it went from, oh, we want Terrence Mann and this pick and that pick and this player and that player.
Yeah.
And to now, like, well, maybe draft compensation only is fine, you know? And because he's an expiring contract. And, you know, who knows who wants to take it on, you know, and Houston didn't really want to have a reunion with him. Even all indications were he'd be open to going back to Houston. You know, does Miami kind of try and get in there? Because like we mentioned earlier, they missed out on Dame and Holiday. And if you're Philly, you're like, you're preparing. It's almost like they're preparing for life after Embiid. I feel.
Ooh.
Like. And, you know, and because like, you know, they bring in Kelly Oubre, they bring in Pat Bev, you know, like these aren't names that kind of move the needle. You know, and, you know, Maxey's a nice player, but he's not a superstar, at least not yet.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of, again, not to mention another article I wrote, but a while ago, after they
Omar mentioned all of the articles. Again, mention all everything. Please mention them. Please.
It reminds me of Patrick Ewing. You know, like this big man who later in his career got injury problems, was kind of the face of the franchise. He was the savior of the franchise. He just couldn't get it done, you know, whether it's players around him, you know, or, you know, whatever. And at least like Patrick got to a finals, you know, in the mid 90s.
Yeah.
And, you know, Embiid he's hit a roadblock. You know, the second round is his nemesis. And I don't know if you got to bring around more players or something, but if I'm Philly, I'm in the East. I don't feel super positive. Like I feel like at that point, you're in that same territory of Cleveland, maybe the Knicks, Miami.
Sure.
You know, you're just kind of like that middle of the pack. You know, you're probably not going to be in the conference finals against Boston or Milwaukee type of team. And I don't think that's good enough for Embiid. He wants to win a title. That's why he's playing for Team USA. He wants to win.
Yeah.
He wants to win Harden.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, I think Philly right now. I mean, this Harden thing. It all hinges on the Harden thing, right? You know, and I think him and his whole situation makes them in flux, and in turn kind of makes the Clippers in flux because they're the team that, you know, is most associated with James Harden. And,
sure,
you know, who wants to take on James Harden at this point in his career? We know he has bad habits in terms of conditioning and being ready and all that stuff. And obviously the playoff performances are well documented. And yeah, I just think Philly's kind of in a little bit of no man's land. I wouldn't be surprised to see if Embiid kind of requests a trade after if they don't get a good haul for Harden. I think that's their biggest concern, right?
Yeah.
Like, we got to get somebody in here who's going to help. That's why the Dame thing made a lot of sense. Where because if you lose Harden and other pieces, okay, but I got Dame.
Sure.
You know, and Dame's going to help me win now. Terrence Mann and an unprotected draft pick in the future doesn't help me win now if I'm Joel Embiid, right? And I think you're going to see a situation where he might just ask out if they don't really do anything this year, and it doesn't seem like they're going to.
Let me ask you this question, and this is one of my favorite questions mm-hmm. to ask other basketball hoop heads like yourself. Will Joel Embiid win an NBA title by the time he retires?
I don't think so, honestly. Yeah, I just, the injuries are mounting. You know, is it as a role player? Like, later in his career? Maybe. But, like, as the guy? I just don't see it right now. Like, if you think about the teams that might trade for him, who is it going to be? Right? Like, who has all the picks? Like, Oklahoma City has picks. The Knicks have picks. You know, like, not a lot of, and plus with the new mechanisms with the CBA and stuff, a lot of these star trades are becoming harder and harder to execute. That's why, you know, the Dame trade needed a third team to facilitate. And, you know, I just don't see it because he's had talent. You know, that's the issue, Francis. He's had players, you know, come through there, and it just hasn't worked for whatever reason. It just, he just seems like one of those guys, you know, just where no matter what he does, it's just not going to work. And so I'm just curious to see what they arm him with. I'm fully expecting a trade, and I don't know if that's going to mean anything in the long run. Like, where's he going to want to go? Are they going to try to ship him off to Minnesota and try to get Towns in return or something like that? Because that's not working between him and Gobert, you know, and you know, it makes you wonder. And I just say, you're getting to the point with the injuries, they're kind of mounting up. And again, it just reminds me of Patrick, you know, as he got older in a Knicks uniform, and you know, the knees got shot, and you know, what did they do then that helped them get to the finals? They brought in new guys like Allen Houston and Latrell Sprewell, who, and Larry Johnson, who kind of elevated them. And he was kind of an afterthought at that point because he was just so worn down. And I think Embiid is kind of trending in that direction.
I love the Patrick Ewing comparison, and I agree. I felt that way for a while now. And the reason why I like posing that question is because it might be a hot take to some, but I've stayed very firm with my take that Joel Embiid will retire without an NBA title. It's not going to happen next season. Not going to happen the season after that, because there's just too many other really good teams in the NBA. And the NBA is kind of just passing the Philadelphia 76ers by right now. They're kind of just passing Joel Embiid by, which you shouldn't say about the guy who just won MVP. You shouldn't say that about that type of player. But you kind of are, and it's not, again, like you said, it's not Embiid's fault. Like, it wasn't necessarily Ewing's fault. Just injuries, but also just weird roster construction around Joel Embiid as well. And I appreciate you mentioning the James Harden, those games 1 and 2 against Boston, because those games and the rest of, but also the rest of his career in the playoffs, but those two games encapsulate the James Harden enigma. He has his moments where he has big games, he leads a team to a victory, but they happen in like game one, game two. When you get to the never actual the games that matter, that determine a series, you can never count on James Harden. Never. Not even sometimes, or maybe he's did it once. Never can you count on him to come up in the clutch in the games that actually matter in a 7-game series. And that sucks for Joel Embiid. Because I'm sure Embiid, when he got Harden, he probably thought, all right, I finally have somebody. You know, I have a guy who's near my level. And yeah, he was disgruntled where he was previously, but he's still James Harden. But that's just not the case. And we'll see, man. I don't think Philly is going to be as that good next year, man. It depends on kind of what they get for James Harden. And I haven't dug time into the trade machine recently to try and figure out where a good haul is for Harden. But especially if Philly's trying to get some draft assets for Harden, then it's going to be hard to get an actually good players. And I think if they get a crappy haul for Harden, I think that domino falls, like you mentioned about them trading for, or Joel Embiid wanting to put in a trade request to get out of Philly. So I think that is the biggest fear for Philly fans and that whole team. But that fear could come to fruition. All right, so let's move on to another team. Give me your second team on your list of team in flux that can make an impact.
Phoenix, right?
Yeah.
Mentioned them earlier. So I just, like, I don't know, man. Like, I just look at this. Like, they get Bradley Beal. Obviously, they got Booker. They got Durant. You know, they got all these guys. They get rid of Ayton, you know, and it's a lot of movement. They're just being super aggressive. This new owner, Matt Ishbia, he's just going for it.
Yeah.
You know, and he is going all in. But, you know, they obviously lose Chris Paul. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, don't like Chris Paul. We know a lot of people that are just not big fans of this guy. And he's in Golden State now. Yeah, so we all know how he's going to do as a Warrior. But you really look at, like, Devin Booker's time as a Sun. And the only time he had success was when Chris Paul was his point guard. And, you know, you wonder, they don't really have a point guard anymore, you know, because their comments have been, oh, sometimes KD will do it, or sometimes it'll be Beal, or sometimes it'll be Booker, you know. And I don't really, like, I know it's a positionless NBA, but I maybe I'm a little too old school, and I kind of like having, you know, a defined leader on bringing the ball up all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, the Warriors, like, for example, just use them, like, you know, it's Steph Curry, you know, bringing that ball up the court every time. But, you know, and, you know, they've added a lot of minimum contracts. I really don't like them getting rid of Ayton. I was high on him coming out of Arizona. I still think he could be a good player in this league. And, you know, you look at, you know, up and down their roster, KD, Beal, they've gotten hurt before. You know, who's to say that they're going to hold up for a whole season? And Booker, you know, and who's to say they're going to hold up, you know, to the season, and, like, who's replacing them? You know, like, that's the thing. Are you going to rely on Eric Gordon or Nurkic or, you know, Kade Bates-Jop to do something? You know, like,
right.
It's a lot. It's a top-heavy team. And we've seen in recent years, top-heavy teams, you know, bad things happen. You know, you look at the Nets, you know, when they had Harden, KD, and Kyrie, and, you know, injuries and different things kind of derailed that team. And, you know, you need some level of depth. You look at the Nuggets who just won, you know, it's because they had a great bench, you know, in addition to an amazing transcendent talent in Nikola Jokic. But, you know, you're looking at it, you see the names and they're popping off the screen, right? And you're like, oh, we got Beal, we got Durant, we got Booker, we got this, we got that. You know, bull truthers are excited because he's on the Suns, you know? And, you know, it's just kind of like, I'm looking at them and I'm just like, do I think that they're going to beat Denver? Not really. Do I think the Lakers could take them out in the series? Yeah, I do. You know, and I'm just like, do I think Memphis could beat them in the series? Yes, I do. You know, and that's the thing. Like, if you had, like, a 4-5 matchup between Phoenix and Memphis in, like, the first round, I would probably think Memphis would win that series.
Yeah.
You know, just because I'm just looking at this and it's like, Durant's magnificent offensively. We know that. You know, he's always been magnificent offensively. But, you know, you start looking at how this roster is going to fit and how they're really going to make this work. And they don't really have that guy who's just kind of going to, you know, glue it all together. And I think, like, for the Nuggets this past year, that guy was kind of like Bruce Brown, right?
Sure.
He just come in and, you know, make an impact and that kind of thing. And every team has it. And they just don't really have it. And it makes me curious because everybody, once they got Beal, was like, oh, man, let me place these bets on FanDuel real quick about, you know, Suns' future to win the title. And you look up and down the West is loaded.
Loaded.
You know, and, like, even a bad team like Houston is going to probably win more games than we might expect them to. And it's going to be a logjam from 1 to 11, you know. So it's going to be tough to even get in the play-in in the West, you know. And, you know, who knows how Dallas is going to be with a full year of Kyrie and Luka and all that. And, you know, I just look at the Suns and I just wonder if it's just like a bunch of these name brands. Like, Bradley Beal hasn't played in an important game in I don't even know how many years. You know, like, since the John Wall era,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like he's put up a lot of points on bad Washington teams that had nobody because they gave him the Superman.
Right.
And, you know, it's just like, and we don't know what Booker's going to be without, you know, a Chris Paul guiding him. Now they don't really have, you know, Yusuf Nurkic is an injury problem. You know, he might not hold up to the season, you know, and you just go up and down this roster. Like, you're going to rely on Nassir Little to be your guy off the bench. Like, I like Nas Little, but, you know, I think that he's not ready to perform off the bench in that capacity in the playoffs, you know. And so I think we're seeing a lot of NBA fans getting intoxicated by the names, you know, and even like some of the older players, like like they got Grayson Allen, and they get Nurkic, and they get these other guys, like Eric Gordon, and they're like, oh yeah, look, these are names that I recognize, you know, and you know, it doesn't necessarily translate to success. So I think the crazy thing for them is they could be out in the first round, or they could be in the finals. You know, it all kind of hinges on their star players staying healthy and their star players performing and figuring out what the offense is going to look like. Because you have three, I want the ball in my hand scorers. How is that going to work?
Yeah.
Somebody's going to have to sacrifice. You know, like we saw that in Miami in the LeBron era, right? Chris Bosh had to make sacrifices because it was LeBron and Dwayne Wade doing a bulk of the offensive work. And who's the guy of those three who's going to want to make a sacrifice? That's my thing. Like, I don't think Beal is. I don't think Booker is. Booker's entering his prime. KD, probably not. KD is firmly entrenched in, I want the ball in my hands. I'm one of the best scorers of all time, which he is. You know, no, don't get it twisted. He's not wrong, you know, and he could still score at a high level with great efficiency. But somebody's going to have to kind of give up the reins a little bit. And I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of maybe target somebody in the buyout market, like a veteran point guard in the buyout market, or, you know, maybe make another trade as the season goes along, because I just have a lot of questions. You know? That's the kind of the main thing with me. I just have a lot of questions. And again, I don't like losing Ayton, you know, as a lot of people question his aggressiveness and stuff like that. I wonder if maybe a new coach kind of helps him unlock some stuff, but now he's going to Portland where he could kind of really reinvent his career, and they don't really have shot blockers like that. Again, Nurkic is okay. He's not a shot blocker. You know, he's a decent rebounder, decent defender, but actually not even decent. He's whatever, you know, he's kind of like a nothing burger there. But yeah, like who's defending who? Like, are you counting on Bol Bol to be your rim protector? Like, I just don't see it defensively, you know, and at least in Milwaukee, Giannis is an excellent defender. Brook Lopez was getting Defensive Player of the Year votes last year, you know, so they have the core there. Boston, you know, Jrue Holiday can defend. The wings we talked about, they can defend. You know, the Lakers, Anthony Davis can defend, you know, when he's healthy. You know, and it's – you have clear answers. And I feel like with the Suns defensively, you don't have those answers.
I don't have much else to add, because those points about Phoenix are things that I've said for months. It's their best point of attack perimeter defender is Kevin Durant. He's 34 years old and he's injury prone. He's your best defender on the perimeter, maybe your best interior defender as well. And that is not good. That should not be the case for Phoenix, but it is the case. And you touched on the lack of depth. It's really funny to me. It's funny to me to hear people laud Phoenix and getting all these other guys to add depth. Well, there's a difference between bodies and quality depth players. Phoenix has a lot of bodies that they can just cobble together a lineup and put them on the floor to take minutes when Beal needs to sit, Booker and KD when they need to sit. They can cobble together a lineup. Yeah, because they got a lot of bodies. But to call this quality depth, that's a reach. That is an absolute stretch. And, you know, they got Utah Watanabe. And he's turned into a very serviceable three-point shooter in the NBA. But people were treating him like a god. And some people were looking at, like you said, Bol Bol, like a god. And people are treating Kata Bates Diop like the second coming of Christ coming off the bench. Like, what's happening right now?
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, that's all they have. If you're a Suns fan, you kind of got to grasp at straws at these bench players and try and make them seem better than they are. Because they're not that good. They're fine, but they're not that good. And that's all they have, depth-wise. And it's such a fragile team, as you touched on as well. So I fully am with you on Phoenix. This trade never made that much sense to me. And I think Beal, KD, Booker will be good together. But what happens after that? What happens to if one of them gets hurt? What happens to their interior defense? I'm out. I'm just out on Phoenix. I was out the moment this trade happened, and I'm 100% still out. All right, so let me give my last team, and then I'll get this is my second team. I think it's my second team, but I'll make this my last team for the second time. So I'll
I'd also make this my last team because it's kind of, no, how about this? I'll just talk about, I'll give one team because I think it's worth discussing. New Orleans Pelicans are my last team of a team.
I have them on my list as well. All right,
perfect. So we'll talk about them in unison then. The 42-40, ninth in the Western Conference, 10th in net rating, which, hey, that's good. Like, 10th, and I was not expecting to see New Orleans be 10th in net rating last year. And we say this every year, Omar, the healthiest team that has actual talent will win the NBA title. It's a war of attrition, and obviously you still have to have the talent. You can be the healthiest team but not have talent, and it doesn't matter. But the healthiest team with actual talent will win the title. If the New Orleans Pelicans can stay healthy, the talent, I think it's there. The talent, I believe, is there, but it's just a massive if. You know, Zion Williamson, I don't need to talk about his injury issues. We all are aware of what's going on with him. CJ McCollum, injury prone as well. Brandon Ingram, injury prone as well. There are bench guys who are injury prone as well. Herb Jones missed time throughout the season last year. Trey Murphy just had an injury. I'm pretty confident it's an ankle thing. I might be wrong. I thought it was an ankle thing with Trey Murphy. I might be wrong. But he did pick up an injury over training camp, and he's going to miss like 4 or 5 weeks from what I remember correctly. And hopefully, I'm a big Trey Murphy guy. I'm assuming you are too, and all NBA fans love Trey Murphy. It's kind of like an NBA nerd's wet dream is Trey Murphy.
Yeah.
And so hopefully this injury is not a sign of things to come for him. But at the same time, it's tough to forecast the Pelicans because of all the guys on the roster who have a long history of injuries. Now, if you could see into a crystal ball, and all it tells you is that this roster will remain healthy and not have key guys suffer injuries that keep them out for over 2 weeks, Omar, where would you have New Orleans finishing? I'm talking about perfect world, perfect scenario, no long timeline for injuries, nothing like that, and they all stay healthy. Where would you have them finishing?
Their potential is top five in the West to me, because they have everything you want. They have a perimeter defender in Herb Jones. They have a bucket getter in Brandon Ingram. They have a physical force of nature in Zion. McCollum, steady in the backcourt as well. Jonas Valanciunas, not a lot of people give him his enough credit as what he does as a rebounder. They have Trey Murphy, you mentioned, just player after player after player. I like the guy Jordan Hawkins they just drafted from UConn, they have a lot of talent. It's just a lot of ifs, like you mentioned. The biggest one, of course, is Zion. And the reason why they're so in flux to me is like the comments you're hearing from David Griffin, where he's just like, oh, yeah, he hasn't really been in shape his whole time, but he finally is now. Yeah. And I'm just like,
What are you talking about? Are you saying that? Like, what does that even mean?
It's just like, and it's almost like you're expecting a injury of some sort for Zion, or you are, expecting some sort of trade demand eventually, with him, and you don't really know. And then, him and Ingram as a duo, that should be one of the better teams in the Western Conference. But, injuries are a thing, and a lot of those guys are injury prone, and that's why they were 42-40 last year.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a team that is just kind of like analytically what you want, in a lot of ways, the type of player profiles that they have. But you could see the injuries taking a toll again, and they could be in the play-in or even on the outside looking in. That's just like the variance with them. We were talking about Memphis earlier. I think the variance for them isn't as great. I think their ceiling is a top two seed in the West. Their floor is probably like a six seed. It's just the way that they play. With New Orleans, it's much greater. And that's what kind of is a little terrifying about them, because they could go either way. And I think if you have another bad year, they're in a small market there, right? They start to think like, man, we got these three guys who are making over $30 million, $35 million a year. Maybe we start looking about cutting bait, getting off of CJ or seeing what that market's looking like for BI and all that. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they finally say, we're kind of irritated and done with the Zion experiment because it hasn't worked for them. I remember that draft specifically in 2019 when you know, again, just bringing up my Knicks fandom, where we're hoping to get Zion with a number one pick, you know, and obviously we ended up with the third pick, ended up with RJ Barrett, who's been great for us. But, you know, it was kind of like Jaws, Zion, and RJ are kind of three guys I always kind of monitor together, you know, and, you know, after the Jaws stuff, a lot of Knicks fans were joking. It was like, oh, man, it looks like RJ's kind of the most stable guy of the bunch, you know, because that was when all the Zion, like, text messages were coming out and, you know, all that garbage, right?
Yeah.
And but that's like, Zion's been an enigma in a way, you know, yes. Just like always hurt, you know, the potential is like when he's at his peak, he's 25 and 12, you know, every night and on incredible efficiency because he's just
and
such a unique body.
And type, playmaking you know? Too. They were in point Zion as yeah. a guy bringing the ball up the court because
mm.
they
how do you trust stop
him. Yeah. How do you stop him? You kind of, it's kind of like a, it was more, how do I say this properly? It reminded me of like of a Giannis in the open floor with how just athletic, how yeah. quick, how strong. Like it was almost impossible to stop in the open floor. And, you know, these types of guys where you, these types of guys, get them in the open floor and they're unstoppable. Those are the unique type NBA players. You think of the some of the best of all time. You can describe them in that way because that's kind of like a separator in my mind from being an elite player to being just a very good player. If you're genuinely unstoppable in the open floor, good luck. I mean, just that's automatically like 10 points a game because you're going to get fast breaks. That's automatically 10 points. Then you're already elite in other areas. Like that's huge. And, you know, Zion is just so is so dangerous when he's healthy. It's just a matter of if. Where do you have them finishing? Like, if you had to predict right now, where would you have them finishing?
I could see them as like a strong six,
okay.
maybe seven seed in the play-in. I just can't trust them health-wise to get them any higher than that. And like I mentioned earlier, the West is so crazy. Like, it could be a situation where they're on the outside looking in. They're like at the 11 seed because this conference has just gotten so much stronger overnight, it seems like. And there's just a lot of solid teams.
Yeah, I feel like we say this every year about the West. It's just so loaded. There's so much talent from top to bottom. It's such a deep conference. You know, you look at it, again, look at the West from top to bottom. You're looking at maybe 8-9 teams who are expecting to be successful, you know, in the playoffs. So, yeah, it's going to be another dogfight. Another dogfight out West. But, all right, Omar, that's for the sake of time, because we've already been talking for over an hour.
Yeah.
For the sake of time, I'll close it there, man. And I really appreciate you coming on the podcast, talking basketball with me. It's been an absolute pleasure. Please tell everyone out there where they can find you, man.
Yeah, I appreciate the time, Francis. Always a good time talking with you. You can find me on X or Twitter, yeah. whatever you want to call it.
Call it Twitter.
At Omar's. Yeah, just call it Twitter. Yeah, find me on Twitter at OmarZHRN. You can find all my written pieces on Medium.com, OffTheBallNetwork.com, and DeepCoverSports.com, where I kind of try to take a little bit of a different approach than your standard sports stuff, you know, not focusing on hot takes and stuff like that, more so just kind of higher level conversations. So got a couple stuff coming this week, so be on the lookout for that on Off the Ball for sure.
If you all don't know who Omar Zohran is or don't read his stuff, y'all got to change that really quickly because y'all got to know this man. Y'all got to read his stuff. It's awesome. He's one of my favorite writers, not just that I know personally, but just period. I love reading his stuff. He's fantastic. So again, Omar, thank you for coming on the podcast. Calling it X is like calling it crypto.com arena. I'm calling it Staples to the day I die. Like I'm always calling it Staples Center. I'm never calling it that thing. But anyway, everybody, again, Omar, thank you for coming on. To all the listeners of the podcast, Francis Carlotta, and I just thanks to everybody. Be sure to like the podcast, give us 5 stars, subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review, do all that stuff that, I don't know, I'm sure there might be other things you can do for the pod. Do all that for the podcast. Find me on Twitter, @SluggerSports. Find the podcast, Up Another Podcast, on Twitter as well. Until next time, peace. Cool days, hot tops, with my blue face.
ice pops. I'ma make a shoelace necklace. Yeah, we whipping pops on Lexus. And I'm skipping school days. Mic drops. Eyes on summer like Cyclops. Yeah, we falling off the sidewalk. Mama, want you home?